Hey Tiger, this podcast contains language and explicit themes.
Oh no, look who's with him. Queen bitch of the universe.
You're not a burden on anyone and it's a bunch of fucking bullshit. Some selfish piece of shit person or culture made you think that you're too sensitive or too much or too messy. You're not. Fuck that and fuck them. You're a goddamn gorgeous person. Goddamn gorgeous person.
Hello. Welcome to This Body, a podcast about being in a body. I'm your host, Sophia, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, as we prepare for an October heat wave. Yep. October, often the hottest month in the City of Angels, as the rest of you Americanos go pumpkin spice, Halloween, falling leaves, crazy. We in SoCal are receiving alerts on our phones about excessive heat warnings. It is what it is. An endless summer. It just keeps coming. I saw The Substance the other day. Took myself off to the Landmark on Colorado for a body horror nooner. Thoroughly enjoyed myself. Demi Moore plays this Jane Fonda-esque kind of character, Elizabeth Sparkle, fitness instructor who'd won an Oscar in her past, has a star on Hollywood Boulevard. As she hits 50, the network puts her out to pasture, and then she's introduced to The Substance. It's really one of those movies where you're like, what the fuck am I watching? Really funny, completely insane. It's about aging. It's about celebrity. It's about becoming invisible in menopause. And Demi gets completely naked, bears it all. Demi Moore bears all in new body horror, The Substance. It's gory as hell, and I think that instead of getting your girlfriends together for the new Blake Lively rom-com, you should get them together for The Substance. Welcome to menopause, bitches. JFK Jr. got busted having a text affair with journalist Olivia Nuzzi or Nuzzi? Unclear. She's this very intelligent, very hot, unhinged woman. Obviously unhinged, because you'd have to have perverse psychological variations to want anything to do with America's fail son and the shame of the Kennedy clan. Old whale beheading Robert Bobbert Jr.
Robert Bobbert Jr.
So Olivia Nuzzi, she's a killer journalist. She has written really sharp takedowns of Trump and other political think pieces. And it's all a bit unfortunate for her and us, really, because engaging sexually with a political actor whom you then go on to write a perceived hit piece on throws one's journalistic integrity into question. Never mind showing poor taste and displaying one's kinks for the whole world to gawk at. Embarrassing. She's on temporary leave. And as for RFK Jr., he's a 70-year-old man. My God, these men in their old age, they're just out there cheating. Fuck. Wow. Sexual attention is truly the most important thing for these old fools and a lot of these young fools, it seems. Apparently men will throw away marriages, families, political aspirations, financial well-being, the potential for more financial growth, or for a few sexts with someone half their age. What is the matter with men? But the real question is, Cheryl Hines, when are you filing for divorce? Your husband beheaded a whale, dumped a bear corpse in New York City, wrote a batshit book of conspiracy theories. Cheryl, she must have a humiliation kink, cause 70-year-old dick can't be that good. Please, Cheryl, it's time to go no contact. American princess Lana Del Rey married an alligator tour guide from Louisiana. very on brand. Good luck to them. I do love the aesthetics of it all, and I love alligators. I saw a photo of her husband kissing one on the nose, and I mean, I just really fell in love with the alligator. That's who I would want to marry. Forget that pygmy hippo that everyone's obsessed with. I'm into alligators lately. They look like actual monsters in the way they creep up on Floridian backyards and swim in people's pools and are covered in black armor and make off with people's Maltese terriers. I mean, that shit is fascinating to me. They represent a place in our psyche that taps into our reptilian brain. And so I predict we'll get some really cool music from Lana during and after this marriage. Lanita's on Reddit are losing it, though, because the husband is most likely a Trumper. Someone did a deep dive on his social media, and a while back he posted some pro-Putin brain farts on his social media. So, you know, ordinarily I'd be reconsidering my allegiance to someone who married somebody like that, but this is Lana Del Rey. We don't look to her for political guidance or for the right way to act or think, or for any kind of truth of any kind. She lives in a world of her own making. She brought her dream world into the real world. And she sings of her own disempowerment regarding men. She's always showing inappropriate relationship dynamics in her videos. And that's what makes her an artist. I am here for the Alligator Under Ocean Boulevard album. Give it to me, you crazy bitch. One day she'll no doubt be in no contact with this guy, probably as soon as he leaves the bayou and tours with her. This simply cannot last. But I think they'll have a baby because she's like 39. She also became one of those Hollywood Christians during the pandemic. She put her celeb pastor on her album. So she's under those delusions too right now. Honestly, I really think the next album is going to have some great lyrics. Oh my gosh, you guys. If you like this show, you should join me over on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for Extra Body. You'll get early access to episodes, 2 bonus episodes a month, random drops here and there, and access to old seasons. And it's a little more savage over there. It's just like the free podcast, but juicier. So go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. That's patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and sign up for Extra Body. You'll love it. Thanks, Tiger. So we're just weeks away from the election now. And I'm guessing some people are reaching breaking points with family members and whatnot, if they haven't already. That bizarre American edict of not speaking of religion or politics is probably wearing pretty darn thin for some. I've seen something kind of interesting online. Parents are posting about their concerns that their children will go no contact with them. When I saw this, I was like, huh? Is going no contact having a moment in the zeitgeist? The way that I've used no contact has been in the context of love addiction. And I think it's a tool used a lot in the 12-step community as a way to reset your nervous system and heal from trauma. But I didn't realize that no contact has entered the mainstream, and parents are preemptively worried that their kids will stop talking to them for whatever reason. I used to listen to Dan Savage's podcast, Savage Love, a lot. I haven't listened in years now, but for a long time I was very devoted, and he talked a lot about no contact too, especially when it comes to homophobic parents who can't accept their children's sexuality. Dan usually advised people who'd exhausted their options trying to get their parents to be civil to their same-sex partners or just accept their sexuality with respect, to remove themselves from their parents' lives altogether, saying the only leverage a child of a bigoted parent has is their presence. And that technique has a pretty good success rate because at the end of the day, parents love their children very, very much, or most of them do, and that bond is more important than holding on to hate that just yields nothing. Over the years, I heard many positive stories of people who went no contact with their parents, and then after a year or so, they have this huge shift and a healing moment, and the family comes back together in a healthier and more alive, real formation. Because, you know, relationships can get stagnant, especially family ones, and of course, romantic partnerships. We need space sometimes to see through the stagnation and the muck to find the clean water source and to align with what our truth is. If you put going no contact into a search engine, you'll likely find a lot of videos of male life coaches telling women how to use no contact as a manipulation tool to get someone back who left them. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about no contact as a healing tool, not part of a strategy to get someone to come back. That's just game playing stupidity. Trying to manipulate and control someone can certainly bring them back to you. But I'm here to tell you that life is long. Karma is real. If someone wants to go, you should let them go. But yeah, you see a lot of dating coaches telling women how to lie, pretend, go against their natural instincts, fake their way through no contact to bring someone back. But that's not it. Some people use no contact to protect themselves from bad family dynamics, from abuse, to be safe from people who are abusive, dangerous, to remove themselves from those situations and to heal from parents and ex-lovers and, you know, sometimes the society that you live in, or can even be applied to social media. In the realm of love addiction, which is a persistent obsession with a person or relationship or the fantasy of that person or relationship, mistaking your intensity around it for love, mistaking your over-connection to it for love, you just can't stay away from each other. You keep going back to each other and you mistake that for destiny, a meant to be kind of thing instead of a trauma response. Mistaking a trauma bond for love. So there's a lack of freedom that you have in those situations. There's an intensity around the feelings, thinking that this person must be your twin flame, your destiny, as opposed to this person representing your childhood trauma in human form. And this is why game playing is a bad idea. Going no contact to manipulate someone to come back, the outcome you want is based on a delusion. So yeah, those relationships where you feel messed up all the time, where you don't feel any freedom or any joy, sometimes we tell ourselves that we've gone through so much with that person. We have a history together. And there is such a thing as nuance and a dichotomy existing, right? Maybe this person really does have a good heart, and the way they act is a result of what they've been through. But your connection to them may also be tied to your own destruction. Both things can be true. Trauma can make an addict out of you, and the fix could be a bad relationship that mirrors the unmet needs of your childhood. Life is like a pantomime. Unconsciously, we're just feeling our way through it a lot of the time, trying to resolve unresolved things, but acting on instinct and our internal compass instead of being more archaeological in our psychological digs. So if you have a relationship with anyone right now that could work, but it doesn't, if it hurts you, it drains you emotionally, mentally, financially, spiritually, or physically, it's impacting you, taking away from you. And perhaps in the past, the ways that you have tried to have boundaries and change the dynamic, it never lasts, because of the trauma connection, which pushes a button inside you, makes you regress. you can't keep an eye out for it mentally because it's reflexive. It's body-based reflexive pattern. It's part of your nervous system. It's also in your thoughts, but it's much more embodied than just a thought. And it causes us to self-abandon because it kicks up rejection trauma. This person that fills that place because you didn't know how to fill it for yourself. If you're a meditator, you'll know the difference between thoughts and yourself. Thoughts are not you. They just pass through you. But sometimes when we become obsessive, we carve out these really deep neural pathways and we just keep going down the same pathways. So sometimes, yeah, no contact can really help us to get some spaciousness around that and learn what we're actually doing. Sometimes going no contact with someone is a result of their lives spiraling out of control into addiction, drugs, alcohol, mental illness. And that stuff is so hard because in recovery, friends and family are told to cut off all contact with the addict, sometimes allow them to hit their bottom. And it's terrifying because that bottom can be very, very low. Homelessness, people die. And with that comes guilt to those who love that person. For some people, cutting off all contact with an addict isn't something that they feel they can do. I know it's very tough for mothers, and mothers are often the addict's biggest enabler. It's very painful stuff. But really, the no contact process is for the enabler as well as the addict. Both are complicit in the dysfunction. No contact is an excavation process, identifying what you've been mistaking for love. The healing starts from within. You can't change anyone. You can't save anyone unless we're talking about rescue animals or literal life-saving in wartime or whatever, pulling somebody off a cliff. Mostly we're just here walking together, walking apart, but we never walk in another person's shoes, so we can never stop them from wrecking their lives if that's what they want to do. So, you know, it's a warrior path, like the path of yoga is a warrior path. Most people don't realize that the yogic path has nothing to do with handstands and pretzel-shaped poses. It has everything to do with sitting with the discomfort of the existential self. Most people are actually more in no contact with their unconscious minds than with anything else. So no contact is not a tool to change another person's reaction to you or to control them. It's a tool of liberation for yourself. Regardless of the other person, the compassion and the love and the kindness you might be showing to the other person, that's now something that you're going to show to yourself because we're not perfect. We fuck up. We fall off the wagon. That's the way it goes. You just pick up and keep on moving. No need to punish yourself or feel like you're all the way back at the starting line. It's not like that. Life's not like that. With every effort, we make progress. And one of the benefits of a period of no contact is peace. That's the best one. When we get some time and space from the chaos of another person, we can start to identify the repeating patterns in ourselves that lead us back to a place of stagnation and frustration in those relationships. And it doesn't have to be forever if you don't want it to. When it comes to love relationships that aren't working, but that, you know, you're toxically addicted to. The prospect of no contact is like the prospect of kicking heroin cold turkey and never taking another hit ever, ever again. It's a bit much all at once. A good amount of time to commit to no contact is 90 days. Or if you want to follow the advice of Miss Sharon Jones, 100 days, 100 nights.
One hundred days, 100 nights to know a man's heart. 100 days.
how long it takes for the habitual to loosen its grip into something a little bit more spacious. During those 90 to 100 days, it's pretty good to have someone to talk to. And that's pretty important, actually, because during the process, you're not just trying to ignore or forget the person you're in no contact with. You're actively working on yourself and noticing things like co-occurring addictive behaviors, ways that you might reach to self-medicate, and the thoughts that come up underneath. You might be presenting as really high functioning to the outside world, but underneath it all, you're struggling. Often people who just kind of hunker down and keep on keeping on, instead of doing that work of self-excavation, they switch to self-medication that can look good to people on the outside, like excessive gym training or going to yoga all the time, replacing one addiction with another that just looks better to the outside world so you don't have to think about it. You've got to talk. The benefit of having a safe person to talk to is immeasurable. And when you don't have anyone, you can enroll in something, maybe like an online course, and just opt to not participate in group aspects until you can handle it. That's really part of it. Know that talking to other people is what breaks you out of the delusion of a trauma-bonded situation. Other people can point out things that are obvious to them but invisible to you. And you can also find yourself hearing yourself for the first time out loud in those conversations and hearing how insane something sounds when said out loud. And then you realize that it actually is insane and you don't have to live like that. Al-Anon is a group I really like. It's part of the AA community and it's for friends and families of addicts. And you can extend that to narcissists. There's often a narcissistic quality to those kind of relationships. I like Al-Anon because it's free and it's available absolutely everywhere. There's probably a meeting you could go to right now, online or in person. You can be overseas on vacation, and if you need to talk, Al-Anon's most likely there. And it really helps to shift the obsession that you might have for this other person, a narcissist, an addict, or whatever. Shifting that obsession away from them and then like back to you. We often think that the whole problem is this other person and that person needs to be managed, but there's two people in the dance. Codependency is real. And no contact creates space. It's about allowing yourself to be loved and not criticizing yourself for your thoughts and your desires, especially as you go through the process. When you're addicted to someone, you really miss the hell out of them. You have thoughts like, oh, I miss them so much. And then why do I even care if I miss them? They fucking suck. And maybe, you know, you try to go no contact for 30 days, but you don't make it. And then it's like, I said I was going to do this thing and I never did it and I suck. So it's not about self-persecution. It's about finding spaciousness. No contact gives you space from the other person in question, room to spread your wings, feel your whole circumference. And that spaciousness also extends to compassion for yourself when things you tried to control spiraled out of your control. You feel me? Like space, space for yourself, the good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly. We don't reject ourselves. We're good enough to not do that. Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia Forever. The pod's on IG too. Thanks, Tiger. It's interesting to me that these parents online are worried that their kids will go no contact as part of a fad or a trend. Something underneath that is speaking to me. Why would your child choose to cut you out of their lives if you're undeserving of this treatment? Something for those anxious parents to contemplate. What did you do? What did you do that you're so worried, huh? So yeah, support. try to get some. If you're doing no contact, if I'm being honest, this is actually the most challenging part of life for me in general, because I don't believe that reaching out will automatically be received and that I will be supported, because it's just not true. People can be very disappointing. No contact is a healing tool for 90 days, 3 months. Compare that to a whole lifetime. Compare that to the time that you may have spent trying to make this thing work with your partner, with your parent, whoever. If after 90 days you want to reassess, that's there for you too. But yeah, 90 days, that's how long it takes to break a habit, to settle the nervous system somewhat, and to begin seeding a new kind of life for yourself. It's by no means when you'll be totally over something or resolved about something. That may take much longer. Some things are epic life journeys. It's all part of the same parcel. But 90 days is long enough to form new neural pathways if you put in the effort, and to stop traversing the old pathways long enough for them to not be just the habitual route that you take from A to B. So reset. So if you decide to reconnect with that person later, you'll be coming from a place of authentic strength. There's nothing in no contact that will destroy the possibility for a happier life. Because first of all, of where you've been, dissatisfied, unhappy. And secondly, because no contact gives you yourself. You'll know yourself better and you'll be more self-assured, which will then allow you and the other person, should you choose to bring them back into your life, to see the truth of the matter, the truth of who you are, what your needs are, and whether or not a healthy, happy life is available to you with that other person in it. These are choices we can make for ourselves. And like anything worth a damn, sacrifices must be made, priority must be given, the garden must be tended, the plants must be watered. This is just a scientific fact. In order for something to grow healthy, it must be well tended. Unless, actually, it's something in the desert, which just tends to itself as long as the environment doesn't alter too much. But anyway, I digress. The other option is to stay swimming in circles in a dirty tank that no one pays any attention to. And that's just not an option, not in my opinion, and I don't want that for any living soul. In co-parenting, this dynamic has really different ramifications, and I'm going to refer any parents listening to this who are wanting to figure out how to deal with their ex while co-parenting to an episode of the Black Girls Heal podcast, and that's in the show notes. Something that can be tough when going into no contact is surrender. Surrender in relationships. It's hard for people who like to be in control. And for many of us, control is born out of childhood dramas and traumas. And that's made us live in anticipation for something to go wrong, looking for threats before they happen, because people haven't shown up for you in the past for all kinds of reasons. People don't show up the way you need them to. And you learned that you could only depend on yourself. It makes you independent, which people always say is good, but I think independence as a good or bad thing is really something that sits on a spectrum. For some people, it's really hard to trust, and that means that you can't let your walls down in other areas. And it's legitimate. I don't personally believe much in the human race, but my experience of that, it's limited to a tiny pool that isn't particularly scientific as far as control groups go. So it's my current truth. It's not a scientific fact. So you have to allow for some variables. So being controlling, if the relationship you're looking at requires control, if you're in fight or flight instead of ease and rest, that relationship is having a negative effect on your body and your health. When you're involved in relationships that have you in a state of activation and management in order to keep them, there's a slavish aspect to that that's not love. some sort of attempt of the unconscious mind to make the world a safe place for us to be in. No contact in romantic relationships, especially, allows us to figure out what love actually is. Love, safety. Love is a place where we're free to be our wildest selves. Love is trust. It is adventure and experimentation. Love is reliability. Love is cooperation and mutual support. Obviously, there are times in any relationship where regiment is important, and family rearing, growing a business together, there are times when somebody's going to fuck up. But for our little fish tank to be safe to swim in, there's got to be some sort of pure reciprocity between people. So no contact can really help you figure out if that baseline of love and trust is there, if it's a foundation or not. Separating from a parent is a really tough one. In my case, I had a few periods of no contact when my mother was alive. Once when I was in my late teens for 6 months. And then there was some years that I lived overseas and just had minimal contact. That was actually a boundary that I had to enforce. I had to move overseas to put a physical boundary between her and I that allowed for a healthier relationship for me. I know it was really, really painful for my mother, but it was a do or die thing. I loved my mother. She loved me, but I didn't trust her. I couldn't trust her. I had fallen for her shtick so many times. And even though, like, I knew when, like, I was getting myself into something where she was going to fuck me over, I would see it coming, but I would still be like, oh, maybe not. Yeah, I fell for it again and again. After a while, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I couldn't rely on her and I couldn't trust her. And things started to hurt a lot less when I accepted that fact and really established my boundaries. I couldn't control my mother. She had bipolar disorder, and I couldn't stop her destroying her life and herself. So we must learn that unless someone wants to change and to help themselves and to be a better person or a more stable person, more honest, more trustworthy person, they'll only do this for themselves when they're ready. No amount of aiding and abetting them is going to change what only they can change. Remember that, if nothing else. Girl, you can't change him. We all need peace. Peace of mind, peace in our homes, peace in the motherfucking valley.
There will be peace in the valley for me someday. There will be peace in the valley. There'll be no sadness,
no sorrow,
oh my darling, no trouble I see. There will be peace in the valley for me.
Your soul needs a rest. We all have way too much anxiety these days, and needing to be in control is going to make that anxiety worse. Surrender. Find ways to surrender. For the people out there who are constantly trying to figure out what their partner needs and knocking themselves out to make it safe for them or fun for them or good for them so they won't leave, so they won't abandon you, anxiety is what's underneath that. Addictions have patterns. No contact will allow you to ascertain what is actually going on when you're activated like that. You're bracing for impact versus resting in the trust of a relationship. This will only work with people who are available. You can't have an intimate, trust and connection with somebody who's emotionally unavailable, who doesn't want to have that with you. You don't need to fight to be respected or fight to be honored or demand that someone show up for you. You don't have to live like that. In no contact, you don't go to that person when you're feeling insecure. You sit with it, and then you find ways to give yourself the assurance you seek outside. And it leads to boundaries. So if you think of a cell, the boundary of a cell, the cell can get hard, the boundary around the cell can get hard, and then nothing can get in, right? If the boundary is too open, then like everything gets in, the good, the bad. And so what we're kind of looking for in a good boundary is for it to be permeable but intelligent, you know, letting in the nutrients, keeping out the detritus. Think a healthy immune system. It's the same with emotional health and emotional boundaries. If you're somebody who is like, I don't need anyone, and you're closed off, you can't receive if someone wants to give to you. Or the other option is like you're too open and in need of lots and lots of reassurance and you overanalyze. So it's, yeah, releasing that, looking within the self, what's happening, where is this coming from? Am I making this my sole source of assurance and safety, that relationship that you're taking a break from? You get to think about these things in no contact. No contact can result in us being able to ask for what we need without aggression and then just receive the information that is given back to us. The space that you get from no contact extinguishes the power of gaslighting from another person. You just don't fall for it because you've been out of it for a little while. You won't be confused by those kind of tactics. People who make you feel run down, who are stepping out on you, emotionally unavailable, all that will just be much more obvious in the clear light of day. And you might be going to someone for solutions who just can't give them to you, no matter how much you want them to be capable of that. And that may not mean that you replace that person. Like, you can't replace your parents, or if you can, it's rare to meet another person to embody that role. And it's also true that you might not meet another romantic partner. Like, that could totally be true, but I mean, let's face it, you most probably will. It's just that we all have our limits, and at some point being dragged behind someone's car can just get too insane. So the reason for going no contact, it's about getting clarity and getting a reset. Do not ever use it to coerce someone. That's not what a boundary is. It's about you, your values, what you stand for and what you don't stand for, and it doesn't have to be forever. This is your life and you get to decide how you live it, but we all need some time on our own. Babes, have a great beginning of autumn, or if you're in California, enjoy the inferno. Sign up for my Patreon, patreon.com/thisbody. Follow me on IG at Sophia Forever and leave a review here. It helps me a ton. Lots of love. Bye. Thank you.